Hi, I'm Heather Mulder.
And I'm Janice Greeno, and you're listening to Dementia Untangled, where we explore the topic of dementia through conversations with physicians, experts, and community leaders.
Our discussions focus on innovative ideas, practical strategies, and proven methods to guide caregivers along a supportive path.
Hello, and welcome to Dementia Untangled. Thank you for joining us for this episode of our podcast.
Today, our conversation is with Missy Paskey-Wood, a community life director at Hacienda at the Canyon, a Watermark community in Tucson, Arizona. And we will be discussing activities for your loved one with dementia. Janice, I'm curious, what do you do all day?
All sorts of activities.
Activities. We fill our day with activities, whether it's taking care of our house, connecting with friends and family, doing beloved hobbies. Our day is filled with activities that bring us meaning and purpose. And I always like to say that need for meaning and purpose doesn't change when someone develops dementia. What changes is the ability to seek that, to connect with that on your own. And activities can be really difficult, become a big challenge for caregivers of people living with dementia. How do you find activities that work? Can you modify activities that maybe aren't fitting for them anymore? So I'm really excited about our conversation today to really dive into how to make activities continue to work for this person.
Heather, activities are so important, and I have experienced the impact of social connections and life enrichment activities in dementia-friendly memory cafes where people living with dementia and their care partners and caregivers can find connection and meaning and purpose and resources and support. And it's so powerful. But not only that, research validates the benefits of activities. I mean, first of all, we often hear about the benefits of exercise, but engaging activities like art and music can also improve the quality of life of anyone and can reduce stress. But recently, I read this fascinating new study that was published in the Neurology Journal from the American Academy of Neurology. And I found that household chores, physical exercise, and social visits with friends and family are linked to a lower risk of dementia. So activities do make a tremendous difference. And I'm looking forward to this conversation to find out about how those can be implemented for people living with dementia.
Welcome, Missy. Thank you so much for joining our conversation.
I'm delighted to be here.
Before we learn more about activities, can we learn some more about you? Tell us about your journey and what led you to connect to the dementia community.
Oh, that's a great question. So my career has been mostly in the performing arts and in nonprofits. And a few years ago, I had said yet again that I was going to get out of that. I had to find something new. And my husband had noticed a job posting for Hacienda at the Canyon that they were looking for a person who had an arts programming background to run their programming for this new senior living community that had yet to open up yet. And so I thought, oh, well, I'll see what that's about. And it was through SACA, the Southern Arizona Arts and Cultural Alliance, which is why I saw it in the first place, which is a local arts organization that's big on collaborations and bringing arts to all areas of Southern Arizona. And so once I met the folks here at Hacienda at the Canyon and discovered that I was going to be essentially programming my own large cultural community, I just was so excited about it. And so I've been doing this for almost 4 years now, and I've learned so much, and I'm I have to say it's one of those situations where it's a job I never knew existed, but now that I do it, I can't imagine doing anything else.
I love that story. You know, it seems like it's one or the other. Either you have people become impassioned to be part of this field because they have a family member or a neighbor who has developed dementia, or it's the opposite where you don't necessarily have that family connection. You kind of stumble into it and you're just hooked. So I'm really excited to learn more, especially your arts background. Could you talk to us a little bit about the benefits of activities? Because it's not just the singular goal of the activity. There's wide-reaching benefits that can be gleaned.
Absolutely. So what's interesting about many senior living communities is we often have multiple levels of care. And Hacienda the Canyon has three levels of care. So we have an independent living community, which is our largest population. We have assisted living. And then we also have memory care, which is what we call the gardens. And so you will probably be hearing me say the gardens quite a bit today. And that's something that we just use because we think it sounds a little nicer. What's interesting is that, as many people who are listening probably are aware, is there are many people at different levels of cognitive disability, not necessarily who need a locked facility for their safety. There's a glide, if you know, into dementia. And so I have people who are in our independent communities who are maybe caregiving for their loved one who has dementia. I have people who are experiencing the beginnings of dementia, who are still in independent living, and then maybe they move into assisted living when their dementia becomes more acute, but they're not in a situation where they're in danger of wandering off or hurting themselves. And so truly the programming that we do in all three levels of care is applicable to folks who are suffering from a cognitive disability. And so the activities are so important because that's what gets people out. There's so much research shown about how important it is to keep moving, to keep those social relationships, to keep those physical fitness relationships, to be trying new things, even as you grow older. And all of those things help not only keep your mind sharp, but also keep you happy. And that's really what our goal is, you know, we want to see people thriving in their older years. We don't want to see people stopping. And so here at the Canyon, we have what we call the art barn, which is our maker space, where we have all kinds of different art classes. We have visual art opportunities, but we also have things like clay or macrame or fiber arts. And then we also have all sorts of other types of fitness, not only normal things that you would see in a normal fitness gym or something, but I also have a relationship with a local dance company called Dance Sequences, which is a wonderful, inclusive dance company. And they've been doing classes here for so long that now members of our community have joined their performing company, which is really exciting. But they do intuitive movement and this really interesting sort of, there's no wrong way to do it. It's not like you're doing pirouettes across the floor. You're making movement depending on how you feel that day or depending on a theme. We just have all types of different things. Just recently, we created a relationship with Unscrewed Theater, which is an improvisational comedy troupe. And they are coming in and doing theater games and improv comedy games because laughter is so important. So, I mean, we really try to make sure that our activities are varied and always with an arts or cultural bent to them. It's not that you won't see things like bingo if, you know, our members request it, but I really try hard to make sure that we are finding different and unexpected activities for our members to do so that they can keep being surprised. You know, folks think they know everything there is to know about living in Tucson. And my goal is to keep surprising them and keep showing them new things.
There are just so many benefits. And I love your creative approach. The art barn sounds amazing. I know that recently I went to an adult day program. It's called Benevia and it's here local. And they have an art room. And those art projects in the art room are so beautiful. But what if, like, there have been times when I've done an art project and it didn't turn out so beautiful? Can you share some of those, the benefits to art, other than having a project come out beautifully that everyone can look at?
Oh, sure. So, I mean, just recently, because right now the season is, you know, Thanksgiving season, the harvest season, fall, we've been trying to do projects that are a little themed that way. And we get inspiration just like everybody else from Pinterest or from looking through magazines or looking at what other folks are doing. And so we thought, oh, let's do seed art. And so we actually did this activity in the gardens, and it had the added benefit of being a chance to utilize fine motor skills when you're lifting up different types of seeds and sorting seeds. Doing those sort of things are a side benefit to also creating the art. And so those are the type of things that are really interesting and you don't think to do. We try really hard not to do activities that would be juvenile. So you're not going to see like hand turkeys, although there's nothing wrong with a hand turkey and it's sort of fun and silly, but unless that we have a grandchild or somebody else who's participating with us, you know, some of the memories that might be triggered aren't the ones that we want to have for people who are adults. We want to respect that life stage and try and find art activities that are equal to them, or what's equal is the wrong word I'm looking for. We want to find art activities that are complementary to where they are in their life stage and something that they can do and accomplish. And even if the whole thing goes sideways, at least we had fun. It was silly. There were some laughs. We got to listen to some great music. Because really the goal for all activities is making sure that we're being social, we're giving people an opportunity to be around other people and to express their creativity, however that may turn out.
I love that you talk about using Pinterest to find activities. What a creative way to tap into a creative conglomerate of people. I also learned in the activities that you plan, you do inclusive activities, and it really reminded me of the work that Janice does as the state lead of Dementia Friendly Arizona, which is all about keeping people living with dementia part of their community, rather than sometimes activities for individuals with cognitive impairments. They almost get portioned off, they get sectioned off and get their own activities. Can you talk about how you make activities inclusive for people, whether they have dementia or not?
Oh, sure. So, you know, I feel like I have to put the caveat above this, that we would never do something that would put someone in danger. So like if we were going to take a trip or something, we would never put somebody who has a tendency to wander or might get lost or something like that in a situation that is, that would be unsafe for them. But that being said, we really feel like anything that folks are doing would be open to any level of care in the building. And so I, at least a few times a month, I'll have musicians over. We have a large event plaza. So we'll have, you know, a little mini blues festival, or we'll have a Balinese music troupe, or we'll have something like that. And we always make sure that we're having the gardens members come over to experience those sort of things with us. And then of course, when we have opportunities, like recently we had, we're partnering with the Botanical Gardens they've got this new exhibit going up called Lights Up for the Holidays. And that's really exciting. And as part of that partnership, they're doing a couple classes here for us on site. And there's one on gardening for butterflies. There's one on doing nature walks around our building and identifying our own natural trees and plants, our native, I almost said fauna. Nope, it'd be the flora. This is why I don't work at the Botanical Gardens. I work anyway, nature, it's very important and it's great. But anyway, they came through and very helpfully labeled all of our plants. And so now we've got this wonderful nature trail that when we look at the plants, we can identify what plants are there. And there's no reason that someone who might have a cognitive disability can't participate in things like that. Again, as long as they are safe. And so there's that's really our only barrier, as long as they are safe and as long as they would like to go. And of course, sometimes that may be different, but if someone is having a bad day or they're in pain or something like that, we would never force an issue. But yeah, it's a fun, it's the more people we have, the more fun we're going to have. That's usually a pretty standard for all situations in life.
What a great philosophy. I'm thinking back to, you know, we've mentioned we're recording this episode. It's around holiday time. And I recently did an activity with my son, who is about 6 years old. And I found what looked to be a really simple kit, a simple project that was gingerbread turkey cookies. And everything came in the package. And I was like, great, we're going to take this home. We're going to have these amazing gingerbread turkey cookies. And maybe if we do this well, we can make gingerbread houses for the holidays. And I don't think gingerbread houses are in our future. It quickly turned into an episode, if our listeners are familiar with Nailed It, an episode of Nailed It, where it ended up looking nothing like what it was intended to look like in the first place. They're not turkeys. And it just made me think about, you know, what is success? I mean, no, we didn't end up with these, you know, handsome gingerbread turkey cookies, but we still have delicious cookies to eat. And we had a blast putting them together. So could you talk to us about what is really success when we're looking at activities?
I think, man, this one can be difficult. So like in our situation, we have 16, I'll talk about the members who are in the garden specifically. So we have 16 members right now who are in the gardens. We have room for more, but it's quite a few people. And there's a range of abilities and a range of interests. And so depending on who I bring in, and I guess that's a side note, is that I try to make sure that we have a pretty varied roster of activities and people who will come in. So maybe someone is more of a dancer. We discovered on accident that one of our members was a polka fiend, loved polka. And so then we have gone hard on that. And now we have an accordionist come in and things like that. And so sometimes success could be discovering that what you did didn't work at all. And so that you know not to try it again. But I would say, you know, success is just making sure that a few people interacted with each other, that success is just making sure that you made a good go of it. And maybe success that day is that everything went perfectly and we shook a memory loose and you got some smiles. That would be extremely successful. But it's okay if the success was even standing up and joining for a while, you know, and of course, as the disease progresses, success can be defined in a variety of different ways. So I think especially for a caregiver out there, I don't think that, gosh, I don't know that measuring success is exactly what you're aiming to do. I think this is one of those situations where if you feel like you made a good college try and you tried to do something fun, whether or not it worked out, it was a success because at least you're, you know, just not sitting in front of the television. So I think we have to be really gentle and gracious with ourselves as caregivers when we're talking about measuring success of an activity, full stop.
Missy, that's such great advice. And I love it that one of our measurements of success can be a smile. And to get that smile, though, and to have some of the success that you've had with activities that are meaningful and help people find purpose and beauty in life, can you share with us some tips or strategies to do that?
Sure. I think it's certainly important to know what your goal is. So whether that is an art project, whether that is doing a 10-minute fitness video together, a dance class video together, whether that is, you know, trying to, as you were doing, you know, Heather, trying to make a cookie together, making sure that you're that you're prepping what you need ahead of time so that you don't have to leave the situation or realize that you didn't have all your supplies gathered. I also think it's helpful, especially for things like that might be out of your loved one's comfort zone, to give them a few days to know that you're going to try it. Whether that is going on a field trip somewhere or going, you know, you're going to try something new together, reminding them, hey, remember on Friday, we're going to do this. Oh, on Friday, we're going to do this. And each day saying that so that by the time it comes around again, it's not a surprise as much. I mean, it could be a surprise. I don't know the cognitive level of every person's loved one, but, to plant the seed, I guess, is what I'm saying, it will be really helpful. And then also just having a lot of positivity. If you hand someone and you're thinking, just like to use the turkey example, if you're handing them thinking, okay, well, they're supposed to decorate this like a turkey, and instead they start to put blue frosting on it, then let's go all in on blue frosting. Like, oh, we're not making turkeys anymore. What are we making? We're making fish. Great. These are going to be the best Thanksgiving fish we've ever seen. And that's just really about being in the moment and deciding that whatever happens is the right thing that was supposed to happen. Being flexible.
Oh, being flexible can be hard though, but really helpful to keep in mind being in the moment and pivoting when needed. I think a lot of your experience that you've talked about within a residential community can be applied in home. I know a lot of our listeners are family caregivers and their person is still at home with them, but can you spell it out for us? How can your experience and the activities that you offer really be brought into someone's home?
I would think that most of the activities that we do could easily be done in the home. Granted, you may not have an accordionist, you know, come to your door, but you could certainly keep an eye on interesting things that are happening in your community and go out to them. There's also, you know, like we had said, a lot of the things that we find on Pinterest, we find in the same forums that family caregivers use are the same forums that people who work in communities use. None of them are secret. You know, that's the great thing about having the resources of the internet and also being in this community is that everybody wants to share resources and they want to share what's working. So I think that there's a lot of activities that could easily be done in the home, especially during COVID. You know, we were having to really not bring in as many people outside. And so we did quite a few. There are some incredible things that are available on YouTube that are classes. And as long as you don't expect that somebody is going to just watch that and do it alone, that is never going to be a success. I mean, the thing is that everybody wants to be doing something with somebody. So if you're deciding to do an activity, I think just thinking that they're going to do it by themselves is probably not logical or realistic. You have to be willing to get your hands dirty as well, or to act a little silly as well. Or, you know, try to do the exercise video together, try to do the dance video together, try to make those turkey cookies together. It doesn't always work to just set somebody up and walk away and hope that that activity happens. So I think you need the buy-in of yourself or maybe another family member or friend to do the activities with your loved one.
Oh, that makes so much sense. Missy, I love how you shared that you've got to be willing to get your hands dirty. It makes me think of those household chores again. People don't understand or sometimes realize that household chores can bring purpose and meaning, and they might not be done perfectly, but they still can be making a difference for the person living with dementia and their family because they're done out of a heart of love. And they also need to receive grace if they're not able to do those chores exactly like they used to. It's still meaningful. So I loved how you shared about getting your hands dirty, and you have so many creative activities. With your background, it is so fun to listen to you. But can you share one of your favorite or most successful activities and the steps that went into it to make it a success?
Sure. We have a recent discovery in town that's been a lot of fun. A few months ago, we saw that there was a cat cafe that opened up in town here in Tucson. And if you're not familiar with the concept of a cat cafe, it was something that started in, I want to say Japan, but they're very popular in Asia, and then they've sort of moved to major cities. And so now they're coming to some of these secondary markets. But the idea is that there's adoptable cats in a kind of a coffee shop type setting, and the cats wander around and the patrons can interact with the cats. And so when we discovered that there was one here in Tucson, we went to their website and we saw that you could rent the entire place out for a very reasonable amount of money. And so that made me feel more confident about bringing our members from the gardens to the cat cafe. And so we went a few months ago, really, truly having no expectations. Pet therapy is great, but usually it's dogs. And so if somebody did have a cat, they don't have that chance. And cats are good cuddlers. And we just thought, okay, we're going to give this a whirl. And so we loaded up the bus and we took, I think our first visit had four members, and we took a couple caregivers and we played cat bingo and we all had a soda and we spent a delightful hour at the cat cafe. And it was so much fun. And it's so fascinating because it's clean. It doesn't smell bad. And the cats just sort of wander around, and there's a variety of ages. There's older cats, there's kittens, it's really fun and interesting. And there were so many smiles. And so we went again last month and we had even more people go. And so we finally decided this is going to be an every other month activity that we're going to go and enjoy the cats. And who would have thought, you know? But I think that that's really important to sort of keep your ear, I don't know, your eye on the ball, keep your ear to the, I'm not sure what the analogy I'm looking for is, but, you know, keep your eyes open for all these sort of interesting things that might be popping up in your city. It wouldn't be surprising to me if there was one in Phoenix. If you Googled it, you might be able to find one. And it was really fun. And even people who said they didn't have cats, they weren't sure if they were going to enjoy it, really had a nice time, because you don't have to touch them. You can just watch and smile. So it's like having cat videos happening in real life in front of you.
Oh, that sounds amazing. Thank you for sharing that story. And what I loved, I think you brought a few key points forward in that experience, is you went into it with no expectations, which, you know, expectations can sometimes destroy the experience if you cling to them and you're not able to pivot in the moment and find the joy in there. If you cling to those expectations, it can sometimes make things harder. You said you went into it with a spirit of adventure, really speaking to, this is something new and we're just going to give it a shot. And I love that you're trying something new, because a lot of times people living with dementia are encouraged to stick with what's familiar. And it can be hard to get them to try something new. But when you were talking about it, oh my gosh, your tone and your energy was absolutely infectious. And so I want to learn more about, how do you get people to engage in activities? How do you kind of hype it for them, especially if it maybe is an activity that could be resisted?
Some of it I think has to do with personality, but I mean, if we know that we're going to try to gather people to do something, to do an activity, do a fitness class, to do something, we really go into it saying, all right, everybody, this is what's going on. Let's go. Let's do it. Because if you give someone an option, it's always easier to just sit in the comfortable chair. I mean, if you gave me the option, it's always easier to just sit in a comfortable chair. And so you really have to kind of pep everybody up, get them over to what's going on, and then have them give it a good 5 minutes. Now, what I like to tell our associates is, you know, if one person gets up and wanders away while you're doing something, that's okay. You don't need to pivot. You know, it's that might just not be the thing for them that day, or who knows? It's sometimes if they're nonverbal or not very verbal, you don't even know. Maybe they've got a rock in their shoe and you know, you're not aware of that. So don't take it personally. But if everybody at the table is starting to turn on you and you realize that no one's having as much fun, is you just need a pivot. You just have to say, okay, well, then what should we do instead? What can we do that would be a good time so that everybody's enjoying themselves. And so you know, that could be a variety of things. You know, maybe you go over to play a game and people don't want to play a game. They want to listen to music instead. Or maybe you're going to go over and try to work on people's crochet projects and people aren't in the mood to crochet. They're in the mood to dance, you know? So you just kind of have to roll with the punches. And again, you know, I know I said no expectations, but you just have to let them go. You won't have fun. Because you have to, not only you're trying to make smiles, but you want to keep your smile too. So you just have to relax about stuff like that and know that, especially if somebody with a cognitive disability is, you know, it's, you can never take it personally. And that's so important.
I love the thought of remembering as you're choosing these activities as a care partner or caregiver to remember to choose one that you enjoy too. But when you're looking at maybe a list of different activities to pick from, how do you choose the activities that are going to work the best?
I think that just has to do with knowing the person that you're caring for. You're going to know them a little bit, and maybe you could try something a little out of their comfort zone. But you probably, anybody listening to this podcast probably has a pretty good idea of what their loved one likes. And so if you can find something that is similar to what your loved one likes, but maybe a little bit different to try something new, nothing too wild, but, see how the first baby step goes and then maybe push a little further.
Missy, this has been such an interesting and energetic conversation all about activities. Before we close today, could you give us your final thought when it comes to activities for people living with dementia?
I think the important thing to remember is that nothing is off the table. Just because folks have a cognitive disability, or they have, you know, dementia, or they have a diagnosis, that doesn't limit them. Again, unless it's something unsafe, but that anything that you could do, as long as you do the preparation, you can do with your loved one who has dementia as well.
Today, our conversation has been with Missy Paskey Wood, a community life director at Hacienda at the Canyon. We so appreciate you helping us untangle the complex topic of activities.
It was a pleasure to be here. And thank you so much for all the good work you guys are doing.
Thank you so much, Missy. And hey, thank you, Heather, for another great conversation. Thanks to Amber behind the scenes as our editor and producer. And thank you to you, our listeners, for joining us. If you haven't already, please subscribe and share this podcast. I'm looking forward to our next conversation on Dementia Untangled. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Dementia Untangled. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Dementia Untangled is hosted by Heather Mulder and Janice Greeno, produced and edited by Amber Ayers, and is brought to you by Banner Alzheimer's Institute and Banner Sun Health Research Institute. We are supported by generous donations to the Banner Alzheimer's Foundation.
Please visit our website at banneralz.org and follow us on Facebook to learn about upcoming events. If you have questions or comments, please email us at dementiauntangled@bannerhealth.com.